All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcast discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Warning, Star Trek from the holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire!
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now!
All right, hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek from the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, the captain of this show. And this is the Holodeck show. Take two, David. This is the Discovery edition of From the Holodeck. Today we're going to be discussing Discovery Season 3, Episode 9, titled Terra Firma Part 1. Hello, David, how are you?
Feeling good. Feeling as good as being out of that agonizer booth.
Yeah. Well, go back in there again, please.
Aw.
Yeah. That's where you belong, babe.
That's where I belong.
All right. So this episode was cool. We have a lot of things to get through. We're going to be spending a lot of time dissecting the nuances of this temporal trans-dimensional doorway. I mean, there was just so many cool things. Very intriguing down the rabbit hole vibe. Especially with the doorway and Carl the doorman. I've always loved when Trek used visual metaphor to convey a tone, like the TNG episode Phantasms, or even when alien species use metaphor to communicate with humans in a way they'd understand, like in Voyager's pilot episode Caretaker. So it had a lot of those things going on, those types of vibes. And yeah, Dave, another solid episode from Team Discovery.
Absolutely. I think this was actually a very interesting I would say that that's their mid-season finale, right?
Well, there was just if we had to say no, there's like 13 episodes this season, so we're more than past the halfway point, but it does feel a little bit like a backdoor spinoff for the Section 31 series.
It does.
I will say that there's definitely some foreshadowing and setting things up for that TV series that will be coming down the pipeline very soon. But yes, a very solid episode from Team Discovery. I can't complain. The writers are killing it this season. We've been given a lot of cool things to really chew on as Trek fans this season. I will continue to express gratitude that the powers that be decided to move into the future. I think it's one of the best decisions that anyone has made in terms of Star Trek in a very, very long time. This being, in my opinion, one of the biggest issues with Trek for the last 20 years or so is that we've been stuck in the past.
Yeah, we've been stuck with the nostalgia. Nostalgia has been the one thing that has been the driving force of Star Trek for decades.
It's not just, it is nostalgia, absolutely, because nostalgia sells. And unfortunately, it doesn't always sell. Let me rephrase that. Studios are always comfortable with doing what's familiar.
Yes.
And that's why we've been stuck for the last 20 years.
And unfortunately, nostalgia has a shelf life. It really does.
Eventually, I mean, people are like, okay, what else do you have in that box there?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's kind of where we were at, honestly. We've been stuck in the past. We have not truly progressed. Think about this, Dave. You and I are old enough to remember this. We have not truly progressed the story of Trek in a big way, and like the bigger story of Star Trek since Voyager.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That is very true. And because, like, if you think about it, after Voyager, everything else has been a prequel.
Yeah.
You have Enterprise. You have many of the movies. Many of the movies just delved back into the TNG era.
Yeah, there's plenty of proof to suggest that we are accurate in our assessment. But now we are at last in a place where we can really move the larger story of Star Trek forward in a way that we have not done in over 20 years. And they are doing it.
Yeah.
The writers are moving forward while also picking things up from the past and weaving them into the contemporary storyline. Of course, the story of Vulcan and Spock's legacy for one.
Yeah.
And in this episode, we finally got our direct connection to the Kelvin timeline. It was very brief. And if you weren't paying attention, you probably missed it. And David, are you ready? As we had suspected, they use Kovich, who's probably Section 31, to create the connection.
Yes.
Kovich was consulted in trying to find a cure for Jo-Jo since her problems were, as we had suspected this, connected to her displacement temporally. Jesus, David, take 500. What is happening this show? I am really out of sorts here. Let me backtrack. So Kovich was consulted in trying to find a cure for Jo-Jo since her problems were connected to her displacement dimensionally and temporally.
Yes.
And this is something that you and I had suspected, and we had talked about it during a past show. And to express this thought, Kovich showed Dr. Colbert a holographic image of Yor.
Yes.
A time soldier and the only other individual known to have crossed both time and dimensions. And he died from this displacement, the same thing that is plaguing Jo-Jo.
Yeah. And actually coming out and saying it's a disease. It's a disease that people that have been temporally displaced. This is there's a chance that they would, and they would actually end up getting this disease. And I actually like that, dude, because in the last episode that me and you were discussing, and we were discussing about how it would lead into this, I was really thinking that they were really going to push, and that whole idea that the universe time itself has ways of trying to force the timelines back together so that everything is aligned and parallel.
A little more scientific.
It's a little more scientific, but I like the fact that they took steps towards that with that. And it was just like what you said, it was a short scene. It was a short dialogue, but it was enough to give us that bit more of a connection, that bit of substance to the idea of how time travel works in the Star Trek universe.
Now, this aspect with Yor, this is the connection. Yor is apparently said to be from a timeline that was created by a time incursion brought on by a Romulan mining ship. This, of course, is the Narada.
Yes.
Which we saw in the first J.J. Abrams Trek reboot from 2009.
Yes.
So just so it's clear, Yor crossed from the Kelvin timeline sometime in 2379 into the Prime timeline and then traveled into the future. I have to say, Dave, this does satisfy my wants. This is all I've wanted, Dave, from the very start of Discovery and even when Picard was announced. I just want something small, just a small acknowledgement of the Kelvin timeline. we already knew it was part of canon. We understood how it worked as Star Trek nerds. We understood it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted that little acknowledgement, that nugget, something to let us know, yes, we do know it's there, and someday we may use it for something. And we finally got it.
We finally got it. And yeah, I agree with you. Am I happy how they delved with it? Yes. But I will be honest, I'm like Veruca Salt. I want it. I want more.
Well, what,
I want
can
it
they
now.
Possibly do, though, Dave? Think about this. They're already in very dangerous territory.
They are.
Anything else they do can run. You run the risk of really convoluting your story. So give us a little now. Give us a little more later. There's no reason, Dave, to bend us down and just shove it in our asses.
Yeah.
There isn't.
You're absolutely right.
That might be fun. We might like a little bit of a rough lay. Some of us do, right?
Yes.
But when it comes to Star Trek, I like to make love to it. I like it to be eased in. I want to enjoy my time. I don't want it to be over so fast.
Exactly. I would rather have some of it. None of it.
Yeah, just give me the tip. And that's what Yor was. He was a tip.
He was the tip.
Yeah.
He's the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
Now the hope is that there's a lot more to the iceberg.
Yes, for sure. We don't want just the tip.
Yeah.
A quarter of an inch isn't that great. At least that's what I've heard. As a Trek fan, this also shows us that things continued within the Kelvin timeline in a similar way as the Prime timeline, at least in a large scale type of way. For example, Yor's uniform.
Yes.
And the temporal wars. These are elements shared within the Prime timeline. And the reason why that's something that I notice is because you, as a Star Trek fan, your mind wanders and you wonder how much was really changed when they created that split timeline. The destruction of Vulcan, the fact that Kirk grew up without a father. How many other lives were altered and changed to the point to where certain things in the next 30 or 40 years would be completely different? Or even 100 years. Let's say the Kelvin timeline's TNG era. What would it look like? Well, interestingly, based on what we saw with Yor, it is very similar. Things ended up course correcting to some degree. That was also an aspect as a Star Trek fan that I definitely appreciated. Because if they would have given Yor some totally different Star Trek uniform, I would have been like, oh, shit. What actually happened?
What actually happened?
And you would probably be a little distracted as a Star Trek fan because you would start thinking about that. Instead of what you should be thinking about.
Yeah.
So what does all this have to do with Georgiou, though? That's the question. Yor died, as you had mentioned, because there was no remedy for his ailment. He simply couldn't exist from a molecular standpoint, I believe is what Kovich said. However, they didn't have the ever resourcefulness of the red sphere data. The data sent them to a planet that could help Georgiou survive. A very mysterious planet, David. Now, Discovery, not really knowing what they'd find, they kind of relied on the faith that the Red Sphere data and the ship would want to help them, right?
Yeah.
Well, what they found at that location was some kind of trans-dimensional door, which just brings in lots of questions.
Lots of questions and has Star Trek fans buzzing.
Is this really a doorway to the past and the mirror universe, or is it some kind of test? Is this Carl character and whoever he represents some kind of trans-temporal guardian? Of course, David, people are saying it's Q. Of course.
Yes, of course.
Whenever you get something like this, people immediately go to the obvious. Oh, it's got to be Q.
It's got to be Q.
Because I watched seasons 1 through 7 of TNG, and that's all I've ever watched, so that's all I could reference.
and it's the fun answer, but when you think about it, there's so many
other... Well, David, I'm the fun police, and I say that's a stupid answer.
No.
Not everything's Q.
It's just not fun, but it's simple. That's the simple way of thinking. It's
a layman's attempt. Oh, wow. We're going to sound really pretentious right now, Star Trek.
I don't care. It's talking about Star Trek.
It's the layman's Star Trek attempt.
Yes.
At trying to create a theory.
Trying
it's
to
the
create
easy
a theory, yeah.
go-to. And sure, it very well could be a Q, but it doesn't really fit the Q personas.
Yeah.
He didn't really act like a Q persona. Trek, especially the original series, is filled with omnipotent alien types.
Who control time and space. We've seen it.
Right.
We've seen it.
Now, Dave, he did say something that could be a clue. When Georgiou had essentially accused Carl of doing something to her, what did he say? It's not my work you're seeing here. Which alludes to the fact that there's something else involved.
Yes.
I don't know if that's going to be covered the next episode or if it's just a hint at something we may see down the road. I do have a theory about who Carl is, though, Dave. Are you ready?
Okay.
Now, I scoured the internet because I'd like to give credit where credit is due. And not one person had this theory. I went through about a dozen or so blogs. And most of their theories were Q. It was Q.
It was Q. I saw that, too.
But this is my theory, Dave. I think we might be dealing with a guardian of forever. And if people don't know what that is, a Guardian of Forever was introduced in an original Trek episode titled The City on the Edge of Forever, which is one of the best Star Trek episodes of fucking all time.
No, no, no. It's not one of the best, Mike. If you ask Star Trek fans, it is the best.
Dude, it is such an amazing episode. Just full of heart, full of substance. And it was written by the great Harlan Ellison as well.
Yeah. I mean, that episode on itself, you're not alone. Because, yes, the first, when I first saw Carl, I immediately jumped to Q, but that's because I'm a Q fan. But.
And sometimes a simpleton.
Yeah. And sometimes a simpleton, but sometimes the simpleton can get something if you give him enough time.
You're not a simpleton, Dave. you actually come up with good ideas, but you are a Q fanboy. And sometimes that takes over your logical side.
It takes over my logical side because I love Q. And honestly, when I actually thought about it, I stopped and I basically said, have we seen this type of alien before? And the only one I could think about was the Guardians from City on the Edge of Tomorrow.
It's the only thing that makes sense, Dave. For a few reasons. In the way of writing. If you were to introduce this character out of nowhere, this all-powerful character that has a doorway that can conveniently sends you to the past.
Yes.
And it's a brand new entity that we've never heard of or seen before. It signals bad writing.
It does.
That's an awful MacGuffin. And these writers are too good to do something like that. So this has to be a character or a version of a character we've seen before. And honestly, this makes the most logical sense.
It does.
The archway in that episode in the City on the Edge of Forever is actually described as a doorway.
As a doorway.
To any time and place. It feels more like something along those lines.
Yeah.
Even the ambience, the tone, the way Carl interacted with them. And let's not forget, I mean, this episode's so good. Let's not forget the amazing allegories pertaining to changing the past, second chances, the needs of the many. Those are all elements that were included within the City on the Edge of Forever. And this aligns better than Q would with Georgiou's story. And it would make sense. Something that is as ancient as the Red Sphere would know of the Guardians of Forever. It would make perfect sense. Why would the Red Sphere know where the Qs hang out? Like, first off, the Qs are everywhere, essentially.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't make sense for the Red Sphere to point them to a doorway where there's a random Q just hanging out. Although it would make sense, based on Star Trek canon, that the Red Sphere would know of a place where there happens to be a doorway. that can guarded by a guardian of forever.
Exactly. And that can essentially lead them to a quote-unquote a device that would change time and space.
And
the
listen,
only thing in Star Trek that can do that, besides going around the freaking sun.
Oh, come on now. Worst science ever.
Is the doorway from City of the Edge of Forever. And when you think about it, Mike, when I actually stopped and thought about it, the theme kind of runs in parallel with that episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have Kirk battling the idea that he has to save this one person.
Yep.
Because he feels that he needs that person. It. But like then all of a sudden, Georgiou, on the flip side, goes back in
what
time.
What is she trying to do?
To save her daughter.
Yes.
That she wants to stop from killing her.
Exactly, Dave.
And now we're going to see the ramifications of that, just as the way that Kirk saw the ramifications of him saving that one woman.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it makes me feel like I wasn't just being a conspiracy theorist over here. And I've said this all season. Georgiou has changed. Her relationship with Prime Burnham has shown her what could have been.
Yes.
A true relationship of love, empathy, and care.
Much like how Kirk saw his life with the woman. I think her name was Karen or something.
Yeah. By working side by side with the Federation, it has showed Georgiou a different way of life that actually appeals to her in some way.
Yes.
It's going to take a whole lot more to break through decades of conditioning,
mm-hmm.
but the desire is there. That much is very clear, especially with how she interacted with people within the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
There are moments of sheer disdain or disgust for how they were behaving. It's no longer normal to her.
Yes.
And as we've said, the biggest reason why she's changed and wants to be different is because of Burnham. Spending time with Prime Burnham has showed her what her Burnham could have been if given the chance. No doubt the writers are trying to convey that Georgiou feels as if she's failed her daughter. And this is her second chance.
Yes.
This is her second chance, which is right on par with the original episode on the City of the Edge of Forever.
Now, the cool thing about that, the difference between the two, that I think I see the slight difference is like...
Oh, there Kirk absolutely
goes,
are.
Kirk goes back and realizes that by saving the woman, the future is terrible. It's the Federation is no longer there.
The needs of the many.
The needs of the many are gone, right?
No, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. You let her die. Otherwise, the great future that we have will never exist.
Will never exist. Georgiou, I'm wondering if they're going to go down the line that she's going to want to try to change her past. But there was one thing that me and you talked about in another episode where you cannot change a person's true nature, which is the whole concept of the mirror universe is they're the polar opposites of themselves. So she's wanting to go back and change her Burnham
mm-hmm.
and come to the realization that she can't because Burnham is who she is because of the universe she's in. And she can't change that.
Well, it goes to the whole thing that you had mentioned earlier before the show started today, that you can't change the past.
You can't change the past.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, that's where we are with Georgiou so far. I mean, that's pretty much all we know, trying to correct possibly one of the biggest mistakes of her life, which very well could alter the entire Mirror Universe timeline, Dave. If she does succeed, she's changing the timeline. Now, is she changing the timeline, Dave, or is she creating another timeline?
Exactly.
Because these are the questions that start to get a little convoluted, or I should say, these are the questions that scenarios like this create, and if you're not careful, it can get really convoluted.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to get into that in a second, but first, Dave, help us stay on the air through 2021 and beyond by subscribing to our Patreon tier. We offer a $3 a month tier, which gives you tons of bonus content and access to our pre-shows, where we go on and on about random Star Trek topics. We also have a $5 tier that grants you access to thousands of hours of additional From the Holodeck podcast episodes. So head over to patreon.com/rainmandigital and pledge. Or I will have David send you to Rural Penthe. All right, Dave. So this does take us into some very convoluted territory, potentially. Where do we go from here? There were questions being posed online after the episode. One was, did Giorgio just create a new mirror? Did Giorgio just create a new mirror universe timeline?
Mm-hmm.
If we keep it simple, Dave, and we go by the logic of the 2009 J.J. Trek film, then yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, especially when you bring in the beginning scene into play with Kovich. Because Kovich bringing up the whole thing about
exactly
the other timeline means that there could be endless numbers of timelines.
Now, that being said, there are slight variations within Trek canon between split timeline and altering or correcting a timeline. As was the case with the Temporal Wars.
Yeah.
Specifically, in the DS9 episode where the Department of Temporal Investigations was introduced in the Trials and Tribulations episode. So this is convoluted territory.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is why I hate time travel. This is why I hate alternate realities.
You and me both.
Because it creates so many questions. What are the differences here? Are we creating split timelines or are we fixing timelines? But if we go by the logic of the 2009 movie, you can't necessarily fix a timeline.
Exactly.
You can't change the past. What you do is you create an offshoot, which is now an alternate timeline running parallel.
Yes.
There's a lot going on, Dave. So even though I'm okay with it and it's very cool and intriguing, we do have to be very careful.
And then, Mike, not only that, but you have to throw in the fact that so on top of creating a different timeline, you're also dealing with a mirror universe. So that's a mirror universe with a different timeline. A parallel universe with another parallel universe.
You got to remember the mirror universe is simply an alternate reality at this point.
Alternate reality, right? Yeah.
You have to be careful with this. You can break a show.
You could, but I honestly am uncomfortable with it because I think with Michelle Paradise, she understands Star Trek, and I think that's why bringing honestly, if I would not surprise me if Michelle Paradise said yes, her inspiration for this episode is probably from City of the Edge of Tomorrow.
I hope so, Dave.
And if that's the case, then I have no problems with Star Trek dealing with the subject, because I think out of all the franchises out there, Star Trek is the one franchise that could tackle a very convoluted concept like this and make it make sense.
But we just have to be careful because, as I said, you can break a show.
You can break a show very
easily. You have to remember that there's a lot of things connected to the mirror universe. You have to remember the mirror universe, it plays a big part in the future episodes of the TNG era.
Yes.
Because of Deep Space Nine. So if you change the timeline here and not make a split timeline, there are going to be lasting effects that, let's forget DS9 for a second. We have to remember that Spock also becomes the Emperor and makes changes within the Terran Empire as well.
Exactly. And what Giorgio is dealing with her time is even before that.
It's before that. So you have that to worry about. Then you have all of the ramifications of potentially messing with the mirror universe during the TNG era, which those storylines were heavily connected throughout DS9's 7-season run. So you got to be careful.
You got to be careful.
What they're doing, and I like what they're working with, but just be fucking careful. So, Dave, is this goodbye to Giorgio? At least here on Discovery. Is that where we're going with this? Because the way the episode was written, it made you feel like she was saying goodbye.
The scene
with Saru and Tilly before she beamed down to the planet, it felt like it was done. Like, hey, all right, see you later. Bye. I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Now, were they just trying to sell us on the fact that she might die, or was this really a goodbye to this character on Discovery for the time being?
I think it might be a goodbye to the character because currently right now, I cannot see how she's going to get back.
Well, the door appeared once. It could be her again.
Well, here's the thing. If she changes the time, right? And remember, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy had the same issue. They had to come back at a certain time and do a certain thing. Georgiou's not going to do that. She got what she wanted.
So you think she's going to stay in this time period?
I think she's going to stay, but then she's going to... Something bad's going to happen to her.
Well, yeah. It's not going to go as planned.
Yeah, it's not going to go as planned. I think that...
There's going to be closure to her story arc in terms of, like, I feel like we're bringing a big part of her story that was introduced during season one.
Yes.
I feel like we're going to bring that chapter to a close because it feels like the writers are getting ready to shift her story into the Section 31 spinoff series.
That, yeah.
So they have to close out this chapter.
And I think that basically for that to happen, she can't return to the Discovery crew. So.
Well, we'll see. I'm inclined to agree. But at this point, anything can happen because honestly, they didn't really give us a lot in this episode in the way of that.
Well, it's a part one. It is a part one, and we still have to see how everything plays out. But at this point, Georgiou got what she wanted. So now in the next episode, we're going to see the ramifications.
You know,
that's a good point.
Or, you know, she might realize that her Burnham's lost and that there's nothing she can do about
exactly,
it.
Just like what I said about the battle of nurture versus nature.
Yeah. Now, the part where Tilly and Saru were saying goodbye, this part did feel a little off for me.
Yeah.
Scripting-wise, it came out of left field and didn't quite make sense based on the previous scene. Was I alone in feeling that?
That is the only weakness in this episode that I can pinpoint to that really bothered me was the technical issues. It had nothing to do with, you know, the story that we're being told or the acting or the directing. Honestly, it was more or less like the technical execution of everything. Partly because I kept finding myself wondering if I needed to rewind something. I mean, you mentioned it off the air at the beginning of our shows and everything was you felt like you had to rewind at that moment to see if you've missed something.
Well, there was a weird moment during that first act that led into the intro and then moved us into the second act.
That moved us into the second act. It was like all of a sudden a hard left.
Well, last we saw was that Not Saru. The last we saw was Georgiou being a bitch to Tilly and throwing food on her.
Honor.
And then literally the next scene is her saying goodbye and hugging Tilly and Saru telling Georgiou that he learned a lot from her. I'm like, okay, when did this happen? When did you learn a lot from her? And when did you decide to reconcile with Tilly?
Yes.
It was very odd and it didn't quite feel right. And it took me a while to get reacclimated to the show. It actually threw me off. I had to rewind, see if I missed something. And then it took me a good 4 to 5 minutes to get invested in the show again because it felt so rough.
Yeah.
But that's my biggest complaint about the episode. It just
mine as well. Because
just like, that bridge from the first to the second act.
Because especially during the first act, when you have moments like that scene where she's dealing with Burnham and Burnham telling her that, oh, you're taking the coward's way out because you want to just die and calling it the coward's way. And that's how she gets Georgiou to turn around. And then you have all that chaos with Burnham and you have to deal with the chaos of Georgiou and Saru and Georgiou and Tilly and mix it all together. It felt a little hammer-fisted.
Yeah, it felt strange.
It felt strange.
It just felt out of place.
Because then also,
and that's not the story necessarily. That's just the mechanics of the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it ruins the immersion of the audience because all of a sudden it feels like you're rushing. That's how I felt. That's why I felt like throughout the episode, it was like, I'm being rushed ahead. We have to get to the point where Giorgio goes to the mirror universe fast. Go, 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 go. And when we get there, it's all of a sudden slam. End of part one. And I was like, that felt weird. It felt very strange to me.
I honestly didn't have a problem with the rest of the script. It was just that. Yeah. It was just that opening.
And that little kind of like, that shows that basically that little kind of error in the writing could really affect how you see an episode, because it took me a while to actually think about this episode, because I liked the episode, but there was something so nagging that it caused me to watch the episode like 4 or 5 times to make sure I knew everything was going on.
Yeah.
You know, and normally Star Trek this season, their writing has been so tight that I get immersed and I get every single bit of substance within like two viewings, because that's how good and nice and
Are you drowning over there, Dave?
I am drowning.
Can we throw
now.
You a
line? Basically, the writing is so top notch up to this point that I've never felt lost.
Yeah.
Till this episode.
The episode for me was easy to follow. I had to rewind numerous times because there was a lot of information. Mm-hmm. But that's not bad writing. The only part that threw me off was the connection between the first and the second act. It just went from one tone to the next, without any justification. But after that, as I said, after I got reacclimated, I was pulled back into the story.
And that's why I told you, maybe it's because this is part one of a two-parter, because we didn't see the whole thing.
No. You're not understanding, Dave. The story was fine. And even the script was fine. It's just that one part, Tilly and Saru and Giorgio, that aspect just fell off. The story as a whole and the script as a whole was fine. It was just that one part that just was nagging at me. It didn't feel right. It felt misplaced. Mm-hmm. So, but okay, so getting back to Giorgio leaving Discovery, it would make sense, right, for her to leave. Perhaps her series takes place in her universe. We had assumed that it's going to take place. Well, first, Dave, if you remember, we had assumed it would take place during the original series era. Then suddenly Giorgio's on the Discovery going into the future. We're like, oh, shit. So her series is going to take place in the future. But now we're wondering if possibly her series takes place in her universe, or perhaps it involves multiple universes. Have you thought about that? Why mess with her timeline unless it has some payoff?
Yes.
Now, we also got the statement, I believe Giorgio said this, in our universe, we call your universe the mirror. I'm not sure exactly why they would say that, but it seems like they're trying to flesh out or remind the audience that universes are potentially infinite and yours is just one of many.
Yes.
And talk about an interesting twist. If Section 31 has to do with multiple universes, talk about a fun way to just delve into things that are familiar but slightly different.
And add more nuance and substance to a concept that we all just figured Section 31 is just the shadow part of the Federation.
Right.
No, we're going to actually add to it that basically they have to deal with the temporal war. They got to deal with multiple universes. Dude,
if every season took place in a different alternate reality, it'd be a fun way to progress Star Trek without running the risk of messing up anything in terms of continuity.
Oh, absolutely. It would be a really fun series.
There's no rules. There's really no rules.
And your center point is Giorgio jumping to universe to universe, seeing all the different things that could happen.
I mean, as long as you keep your classic Trek themes intact, right? And you make sure you don't lose the show and it doesn't feel like Trek, then by all means, do whatever the hell you want. Anything can work. I've always said this was Trek. Yes. As long as you adhere to the core principles of Star Trek, it could work. Now, Christina Johansson, one of our listeners on Patreon, she actually has a theory of her own. And she said, to comfort Dave, I have a tin hat theory of my own. She says, we're going to get Captain Sulu. That's who Georgiou will meet when she crosses over. I'm not sure what she's basing that on, but it sounds cool. The Section 31 series will take place in the Kelvin timeline. Dude, that would be actually...
That would be kind of cool.
I actually would be okay with that.
I would be okay with that.
If her series takes place in the Kelvin
timeline.
That'd be an awesome way to continue on with that era.
It would.
Without having to worry about when we're going to get our next Kelvin timeline movie.
Pretty much, because I think that'd be a genius way of approaching it, because then at that point, you don't have to worry about getting the Enterprise crew.
Yeah.
Because if you do a separate series within the Kelvin timeline, the sky's the limit. You can
cover
anything you want. And I do like the idea that of running into Captain Sulu, because...
Well, you could do so many cool things.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. The Section 31 series could absolutely work within the Kelvin timeline, but I'm not sure we will get that. We could get something close to that, though. It does seem like they're getting into that territory. I mean, we've always... Star Trek writers, going back to the Berman and Michael Piller era... I mean, they have always toyed with these larger scale cosmic threats, you know, like the temporal wars. I mean, that was a big part. That was a part of Deep Space Nine. That was a part of Voyager. That was a part of Enterprise. In fact, Enterprise's the foundation of Enterprise was built on that concept. So this would be a new avenue to go down. Instead of dealing with the temporal wars, you're dealing with alternate realities.
Alternate realities.
It could be very interesting and a good way to breathe new life into yet another Trek series.
Yes. And I think that's the thing, is like bringing in new concepts for Star Trek to delve into, because that's what Discovery did. Discovery brought in new concepts that we can all talk about.
Yeah. Especially this season.
Exactly. And like, if you take that with a series like Section, I think you could do that even more so with a series like that based on Section 31, where you basically have the characters jumping from reality to reality to just tackle every single bit of Star Trek question that you could possibly come up with.
Yeah, it would be really fun. In a lot of ways, it would feel like Brian Fuller's original plan for Discovery.
I honestly think that that's probably what his original concept was.
Possibly. I mean, as we know, Brian Fuller's original plan for Discovery was more of an anthology series where every year would be a new crew dealing with something different in different timelines.
Yes.
And different eras of Star Trek is what he had said. So, I mean, this could be something that would take us back into that territory. Either way, all of this could very well end up shaping the Section 31 series, because the episode story, I'm not sure if you were aware of this or you noticed, was written by Bo Yan Kim and Erica Leopold, both of which will be the showrunners for the Section 31 series.
That I did not notice.
So it stands to reason, whatever is at play here will have lasting effects in a big way. It does feel like, depending, let's wait and see what part two offers.
Yes.
But so far, it feels like a bit of a backdoor pilot.
Now that you bring that up, yeah, it does. It seems like a backdoor pilot, but I'd be really excited. That makes me more excited for Section 31 than anything else then.
Yeah. All right, Dave, so let's go to a very quick break. And then when we get back, we'll close out the show and talk about the rest of the crew and the things that were introduced and conveyed to us. We'll be right back.
Black alert. Black alert.
All right, get more Star Trek from the Holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that Holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the Holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcasts, discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
Now get some tits on the stage. Get some tits on the stage. Everybody will forget all of their political beliefs and ideology. Like, who's that hottie McGee?
Sex sells, man.
It really does. Let's put, who's a woman that you'd like to see as president,
that's
Thomas?
That's a politician?
Oh, I didn't say politician, okay, just a woman. What's the Mexican lady that has a very thick accent from that sitcom with the family? A family show.
Oh, Modern Family?
Yeah, Modern Family. Like, if you were to put her on that stage and say, hey, she's a Democrat, I think there would be people crossing party lines.
Yeah, I would vote for her, too.
She's married to
Sofia Vergara.
There you go.
Yeah, people would be crossing party lines to vote for her.
We'd see some real change at that point.
Yeah, all the states that were red now turning blue.
I don't know. Is she a born citizen?
Who cares? Who cares, Steve?
Because there's factual laws.
I don't care.
Destroying every bit
laws
tonight.
And you think they matter when it comes to politics?
Well, Michael, I know this is all hypothetical and it's all like tongue-in-cheek and it's satire, but man, I want to make sure I bring the entire show to a halt yet again. Just as I want everyone to know that she can't actually run for president because she's born in Mexico.
God, you're that scientist who disappointed everyone after Jurassic Park by saying dinosaurs were like chickens, not dinosaurs at all.
You're a goddamn boner killer. God damn it.
Jesus. Nobody cares about facts.
You know, Bobby and Ryan have told me this about Steve, and I've never seen it until tonight. He must be getting really... I mean, no more champagne dates. I think you're getting way too comfortable, Steve. I like the old Steve. Just fall in line.
All right.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off, plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN, because without it, no free stuff. That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek from the Holodeck. All right, Dave, so what's the deal with Kovich? He didn't seem to trust or have any type of faith in the Red Sphere data.
You notice that too, huh?
Is he a bad guy? He seemed like he really didn't want them to use the Red Sphere data. He even called it, what, alien? Like, why are you going to trust this alien information?
Yes.
There's got to be a reason for that. You don't include something like that
now
in a script unless there's got to be reasons. Either to shed some light on the character of Kovich and how he thinks, or if you're trying to foreshadow a potential narrative direction.
Now, if he is part of Section 31, though, it makes a little sense that him as a Section 31 officer would not trust anything of alien origin.
That's valid.
Because remember, all Section 31, from what we've seen, they're very
suspicious
of anybody non-human.
And it goes right in to their job description, right?
Exactly. So it would make sense if he's... I don't know if they'll come out and say Kovich is Section 31, but it's leaning towards the fact that he is Section 31, and it did kind of raise my antennae when seeing him react to the alien computer.
Your Andorian antenna?
My Andorian antenna.
Yeah.
And I don't want Kovach to be a villain, dude. I really don't. I don't want him to be a villain.
Yeah, but neither do I. I don't mind a gray character.
I'd rather him be a gray character.
Yeah. We'll see, right? The bulk of the episode was designed around Georgiou, but yes, we did get bits on others as well. Saru seems to be struggling as a captain.
But it's to be understandable, though, right? Because he is just become captain of the Discovery.
I felt bad for him, though, when he thought he was making the right call, and then the Admiral's all like, hey, listen, buddy, I mean, come on, go save your crewmate.
But that was interesting, actually, telling of Vance, too, because, like,
I agree.
When he comes out and says it's more important to make sure all your crew lives,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
And I'm like going, this flies in the face of the whole Federation. Hey, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yes, absolutely. It was a great learning moment for Saru. So that's number one. We have a guy who is still very new at being a captain. Was not forced, but thrown into the position of power. Maybe he wasn't necessarily ready. I would argue that he probably wasn't ready. Would he be a captain if nothing had happened crazy that killed their captain, Lorca, or I should say, betraying his crew and then Captain Pike? Probably not. If they were in Federation space still in their timeline, they probably would have gotten a captain for the Discovery. So he does have a lot to learn. Just like everyone on that ship. That's the interesting dynamic with Discovery is these are people who have been through a lot and who are very experienced and they have been forged in fire. But the dynamic, the chemistry of this crew is very different than any crew we've seen in Star Trek to date.
It's still in its adolescent stage.
They're new. In TNG, we had a very experienced captain immediately. We had Picard.
Yes.
We had an experienced crew right away. That was how that show was set up. Deep Space Nine, we had the merging of the Bajoran officers and the Federation. But for the most part, they were experienced.
Yes.
Voyager, same thing. We had the
Maquis.
That came with its own issues and learning to work within Federation protocol.
But still, they were all veterans. They were all experienced officers. When you look at Discovery, that I think a lot of fans keep forgetting, this crew is still young. We feel like, oh, they should be veterans at this point. But in actuality, when you take into the timeline of season one to present day season three, they're still a young crew. Yeah. I don't even think that they're past their 5-year. They're even close to a 5-year crew. They're probably close more to a 1-year crew than anything else.
No, I can see that. And it works. It's one of the elements that's interesting about this show is that you have a group of very young officers who aren't necessarily experienced in all avenues that they possibly would be if they were in their timeline and in those positions of power. So I liked it. So it was a learning moment for Saru, and it was a good way, as you had mentioned, for us to see another side of the Admiral
Vance.
Admiral Vance, yeah.
And it was a little surprising, I'll be honest. I mean, up to this point, we've been introduced to Vance as kind of like this almost stern leader of the remnants of the Federation.
And he has to be.
And in this episode, we finally get some insight underneath that stern commander that he understands that being a commander also is slightly different than being a captain of a ship.
We needed to see that Federation side come through.
The Federation side of him coming
out. We needed that. I feel like it helped the character a lot. It was a nice, quick way to help us understand him just a bit more.
Yeah.
And also, potentially, maybe his Federation side's coming through because he's also being influenced by the Discovery crew, that they're changing him as well, which is what these, or I should say what this season has really expressed, the notion that hope has arrived and they're changing people's perspectives and giving people faith and changing things for the positive.
Yeah.
So that could be very, very well could be the same case here with the Admiral. So the writers are also continuing to build on Adira and Stamets' relationship. I like it. As I mentioned in our last episode, it's way better than Stamets Culbert.
Do you think there's something going on with Adira's personalities, especially this whole idea that Gray has stopped talking to her?
It's a little melodramatic.
Well, on top, but here's the thing.
I'm not too keen on that aspect, but.
But here's the thing. Gray is also one of the elements that has led the Discovery crew back to the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, also, Gray is tied somehow to whatever caused the burn, because the whole, remember in the last episode, they have that scene where he's playing the same music that is being heard.
Right.
Throughout the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like going, suddenly Gray's nowhere.
Yeah. There's got to be something there. I mean, it could also be simply him trying to force Adira to open up and become a part of the crew rather than just relying on their relationship. I mean, I believe they even mentioned that in this episode. So that could be the case, but that also seems very anticlimactic and
too melodramatic.
It's melodramatic and also a little too easy for a series like this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Booker wants to stay on Discovery because that ass on Burnham, that's why, and contribute. But Saru wants him to grow familiar with protocol. I didn't expect anything else.
I didn't expect anything else, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's obvious after last episode, Booker is staying for that Burnham.
give me that Burnham booty.
And who can blame him? Dude, isn't it shocking too? Since the beginning of season one, when everyone was like, going, oh, Burnham, she's not that hot. Season three,
She is super attractive.
She's super attractive now.
Yeah, she's super attractive. All right.
Even her mirror universe counterpart.
Oh, she's evil. I'm like, kill me, please.
I was like going, you know, I was turned on by Captain Killy, but Burnham, evil Burnham is actually kind of hot.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave. Women, they're so great.
It's just add some evil to them.
Yeah, give us some evilness. And let's not, I have to say this every show. Booker, please just get off. Let's get back on your ship. He's getting off. Oh, dude, come on. Don't say that.
And the cat's watching him.
Probably. Oh, stop. No, dude. Burnham's a lady. He doesn't do those things. All right, Dave. So give me your final thoughts on the episode. I know you had some issues.
I did have some issues. Yeah. Well, it didn't affect the score too much because it was only one thing.
Yeah.
That was it. And that was the only thing in my negative, in my con side that I put in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
So overall,
what's your RMD score, David?
I'm going to give it a 90. This is making me comfortable.
So gracious of you.
Yes, I know. Since the last one, I'm like going.
I'm
going
to give it a 90.
A 90. I'm going to give it a 90. Oh,
what a douche.
But overall, it's a good episode. Once again, Discovery is proving, you know, naysayers wrong, honestly.
Oh, without a doubt. Dude.
They're proving naysayers wrong. This third season is gearing up to be even better than season two, which is a shocker to me because season two for me was some of my favorite Star Trek moments in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that story of Burnham and Spock.
Yeah.
But here, the whole story about the Federation regaining hope is fantastic. I think it's being well done right now.
All right, Dave. I enjoyed this episode. I'm going to give it a 92%. It was a strong addition to this season. The episodes are just well-crafted. The stories are well thought out. Everything is working in tandem. Things that need to be embedded within your script, within your narrative, they're being embedded. And that's why the series is progressing the way it is. So 92%, the grade might go up by the end of part two. Once certain ideas are fully formed, we shall see. I want to thank everybody for listening. Remember, find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us reviews. Give us thumbs up. We need them. Also, patreon.com/Rainman Digital. Pledge. Pledge $3. Pledge $5. And you get more content. You can also, if you're not up on the whole monthly thing, you also just pay a year and be done with it annually. $30. $50. Because you get 2 months free when you pledge for an entire year. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.